Welcome back to the Whitetail Watch podcast. On today's episode, we're going to be talking all about small properties, and I'll bring on a couple of our Midwest Whitetail Pro staffers as guests. Rick and Joe Knuckle are from Northern Missouri. They've been on Midwest Whitetail with us now for several years, and their family has had a lot of success hunting their small little 70, 80 acre farm down there. They've killed mature bucks nearly every year for the last three or four seasons, maybe even longer than that. And the guys definitely know what it takes to manage one of these small places and hunt it effectively. They also just recently bought another small property just up the road they've been saving for several years. And we're going to get more information on that, what factors came into play with their decision-making process and choosing another property to buy, and then some of their management goals as well. So lots of information on today's podcast. We're not going to waste any time. Go ahead and give Rick and Joe Knuckle a call.
Hello?
All right, Rick, do I got you?
Oh, yeah.
Joe, you still on there?
I'm still here.
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good.
Good deal.
Doing good, Aaron.
How's the hotel up in Wisconsin treating you so far, Joe?
Pretty good. I found out the parking garage here at this hotel, the clearance for a vehicle is 6'3", and my truck does not fit in the parking garage. I actually ran into the bumper that, they put the bumpers up there that, if you touch this, don't go any further. Yeah, I ran into that, so I had to back out of the parking garage. So that was a mess. But other than that, great.
Oh, boy, how are you doing, Rick?
Well, I'm doing good. I just got the kiddos to bed, so free time it. So
cool. Good deal. Well, I've just been outlining you guys in the small property thing. And I wanted to first off dive into your new property that you all just got this year. Joe and I were talking about it on the phone not too long ago. And I want to know all about your whole decision-making process and some tips that you can give the listeners on saving money for a small property, and what to really look for when it comes to buying one. Because I know you guys spent a long time saving and, trying to really find the right one that really fit your needs to the T. So go ahead and tell the viewers about that. Rick, you can start it off, and Joe, you can chime in there with him.
Yeah. So, I guess to start off the process, I think everyone out there, well, not everyone, but a lot of people out there are looking for their own little piece of heaven to, put food plots in, to do the whole management thing and really try to make a place where they can take their family out, or they can just enjoy creation and enjoy a place where they've kind of made it their own. And we have one place like that established, but we have lots of kids coming up. And so we've kind of set out to look for another property. And in doing so, we kind of made a list of things that were important to us, which on the top of that list was definitely deer hunting, but also just a place that was close to our home, some of the minor things that a lot of people probably look at, close to your house, that you can get away, but has good deer activity and has the potential of raising some big deer. And with that in mind, we kind of set our goals and set the idea of where we were going to look, and just started looking and saving. I think from the saving aspect, I think one thing that we did that was kind of interesting or different than maybe a lot of people is we have me, my brother, and my dad in on the deal. So it made it more economically viable for us to actually find a property that we could buy into without breaking the bank. Like I said earlier, I have kids, my brother has kids, and it's tough anymore to find a property that you can buy into that's big enough to hold any deer. So that was kind of number one. Then I'll let Joe kind of talk about what we were looking at, maybe a little bit more specifically, and some of the dynamics of properties because he kind of had more of a role on that, I guess. So,
yeah, so I'll jump in here. The particular property that we just purchased, the 80, the first thing that caught our eye was the price. And with property, it's enough money, you got to view it from an investment standpoint. So if you are not going to get into a property at a value where you think the property will appreciate, then you're going to lose money on it. And it's, you know, a big enough investment that losing money is not something that you want to do. So we were looking for something that had an upside as far as we thought the value would increase. So the particular property that we bought, we thought there was a lot of room left in the property as far as the value that we bought it at. And so that was the first thing that caught our attention. The next thing is when I first went out there, is this property is river bottom ground. It's along one of the smaller rivers in Missouri, but it's still a pretty good size river. It's definitely not a creek. It's a river. And we grew up hunting river bottom ground. We hunted the Mississippi River bottom for as long as I can remember. And so we already had an appreciation for that type of terrain because river bottom ground can get really thick, really nasty, pretty, you know, in a variety of ways. And so it, because of the thickness of this particular river bottom ground, we were drawn to it because we knew that would hold deer. Then the next thing we started looking at is, okay, it could hold deer, but is it huntable? Because if you buy a property that is difficult to hunt and you could only get like maybe one set that is a good set on that property, then you're paying a lot for just one spot to hunt. So as we walked the property and learned about features on the property, we decided that there were at least three spots right off the bat that jumped out as really good potential spots. And we currently have four stands on the property and two food plots. And so on an 80, we got four really good sets out of 80 acres. So there was value in the number of good huntable locations that the property had. So with a small property, sometimes you're not looking so much at the acre size as you are is the number of stands or huntable locations on the particular property. So So after that, we said it's worth it to purchase the property, and we threw an offer on the property. We made an offer, accepted, and then went through the process of finalizing that offer. And now we've owned it for right at a year. So we closed on September 30th last year. So we've had the property 1 year, and at this point, we don't regret it. We've really liked the opportunity to hunt something new, and also we feel pretty confident in the property itself that it'll produce big deer.
The thing there that you were saying that sort of intrigues me is you said there's a fair amount of really thick, you know, security cover on that property, and I'm sure that's obviously one of the most important factors. If you're buying a small property, you want to try to keep, you know, big bucks on the place so that you can watch them grow from year to year, like you all have done on your other family farm. But what percentage of this new farm is that thick river bottom nasty stuff that you're talking about? Like, what percentage would you say roughly is that thick nasty bedding cover, and then food plots, and, you know, ag destination food source, and that sort of thing?
Well, the property out of the 80 acres, I think there's 9 acres in CRP, and the rest of it is timber, and most of that timber is thick. So I'd say a good 70% of it would be considered thick bedding cover.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty good amount then. How does it differ? And let me rephrase that. How does that property differ from your other farm that y'all have grown up hunting? And in the way that it sets up for you to hunt, or is it fairly similar? Can you get just as many hunting spots and good locations out of this new property, you think, as y'all have been able to do on your old one? Because I've already told the viewers, and obviously a lot of them have watched you guys kill several mature bucks off of that small family farm. How big is that farm, Rick? Is it 70 acres?
Yeah, so our original home farm is 70 acres. It's definitely one of those farms that hunts bigger than the actual acreage is. And the nice thing about small acreage, and we'll try to get back around to your point, but one of the nice things about small acreage farming or hunting that maybe large acreage hunting doesn't incorporate is you can focus solely on that small acreage and pull deer in from surrounding farms, where if you own 200 acres, you're not going to really try to do that as much. So that's one aspect that we've really done well. And I guess in comparison to our other farm, the original 70 acres, I'm guessing, is probably 70% timber and 30% open ground with food plots scattered throughout. And the new one is probably like 90-10, like Joe was talking about, 90% timber. And so it's interesting that probably, and especially being river bottom ground, one thing that we like to do is realize what you have in the piece of property. So are you looking at an area where they're going to be feeding? Are you looking at an area where you're going to be bedding? Are you looking at an area where it's going to be mainly rut intensive? You got an area of transition between a couple other big blocks of timber. I mean, so we always look at these small properties and try to figure out what time of year it's going to be good and how we can incorporate it, to be better. And in doing so, we've definitely looked at our other property and tried to figure out what we did right, what we did wrong, and have definitely made some plans on this new property to make the bedding area better. One thing that, I think I, as a new hunter, got stuck into was, oh, there's timber. That means they're bedding in that timber. But not all timber is equal for bedding. And, especially that park feeling. If you get into a piece of timber and it's open, not much underbrush, you're not going to get much bedding in an area like that. And starting off, I didn't really care. I thought, if there's woods, they're bedding in it. And since doing TSI and since making some thicker areas on the original farm, it's exponentially grown as a bedding area, and it's definitely one of the things we want to do on this new farm as well.
I see. What would you say after you bought it? What are your first improvements that y'all made to the new farm, and what are some that you intend to make, as the years go by?
Well, Aaron, we could, both of us could take it, but right off the bat, we went in and we put in two food plots because there was no food on the property. So we knew we wanted a food source, at least to hunt over. The food sources we put on this property are not large enough to be the main nutrition source for the deer. So they're more of a hunting type of food plot. As soon as we got those food plots in, then we started, looking at the property as far as mainly the bedding and where we wanted to create even better bedding in the property. Because where you get deer to bed relates to, when they get up, how they're going to move, where they're going to go. So we took a particular piece of the property and we hinge cut several trees to improve the thickness of that particular area. And so that was those are the only improvements we've made at this point. I would say we have plans for a food plot that we would call the killer food plot. We have an idea where we'd want to put the food plot in a ideal location where we think we'd catch a lot of cruising deer, we'd pull deer, easily from bedding, and it would be the ideal place for a food plot, but we're kind of reluctant to go in there and clear that out and make it until we fully understand the patterns of the deer on this property. One thing is with a new property, we feel you should at least learn what deer naturally want to do. And because if you just enhance what they already want to naturally do and you work that into your plan for killing the deer, it's just going to be that much more successful. So right now we're still in a little bit of the learning stage of what are the deer habits on this property. And so this year, a lot of what we're doing, there's a couple deer we're after out there, but a lot of what we're doing is observing and just watching the deer and how they move and you know, what pace they move. Do they move from A to B, you know, direction of movement, all that stuff. So we're going to take all that in and then make our next move improvement wise. But our first steps were really basic, just the obvious. We know we need kind of a couple things just to help us get started.
I think you bring up a great point there, because I see lots of folks that buy properties sort of dive in there and try to maybe sort of overmanage and do a lot of stuff without really observing, like you just said, and watching and seeing how the deer naturally move through that place. I think that's a big key. And I'll go back to Rick here on this next question from the family farm. What, obviously you guys have been hunting that property there for a long time, and you've made many improvements on it over the years that have aided in your success. But what would you say the single most important thing that you guys have done to that farm since you all started hunting it? You know, I mean, I've seen your all's success just skyrocket a lot just in the last, you know, 5 years. And if you could point out one thing for the listeners, Rick, that'd be great on that property.
Yeah, so that's a good question.
Put you on the spot there.
I could go, yeah, right. I could probably go one to two different ways, and so I'll kind of bring up maybe one or two. But I think the biggest thing that we've probably done is conditioned the deer. And what I mean by condition the deer is the way we utilize that farm is solely set up to where we can hunt those deer and that they don't realize that they're being hunted. I think it's always important to realize that we are a predator and they are the prey, and they understand that relationship. So we should understand the relationship as well. And the better you do at low impact on the farm, the better quality of deer you'll see. And that's a tough thing to do. It's easy to say, yeah, we're going to do that, but it's tough to stay out of a place and also get inventory out of a place. Along with that, as far as what we've actually manually done on the farm, I think in my estimation, I would say the timber stand improvement was probably the single best thing that we've done on our farm. Food plots have helped immensely, and that one gets hit pretty hard. I mean, I don't know too many guys that are buying a piece of property that aren't putting some type of food plot on the farm, and I think that's a very good key to killing deer in general. But as far as killing mature bucks, I really think the timber stand improvement has probably helped us out more than anything in that aspect. And I mean, most people probably know what timber stand improvement is, but it's a government program, or there's government assisted programs to allow you to cut out poor quality timber. And essentially it's set up to create better timber in the long run so that you can get more money out of logging a piece of property. But secondarily, what it does is it opens up the canopy on the floor and allows new regrowth. And if you've hunted for very long, you realize that any area with that allows regrowth is going to create thick areas and create awesome bedding. And
I just think, I would say after that, we've been able to hold deer more on a property and hold more deer because they don't see other deer as easily. And I think there's more areas where they feel comfortable to bed, to I don't know, just kind of do their thing.
Yeah, and like you said, it hunts much bigger than 70 acres, you know, because of that reason. And it's very interesting to me that you've got a small property like that where you can follow these deer, you know, year to year. Obviously, they wander off and get shot and that sort of thing. I mean, that's going to happen just about anywhere, you know. But with these small improvements that you guys have done, it's definitely helped keep that from happening, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would definitely say that's very true. I mean, just like everyone else, we definitely have... We cringe when gun season gets there. Don't get me wrong. We love gun season. I love getting out there. It's fun. And it's hard. I love, you know, other people to be successful during gun season too, just not my neighbors. and that's not entirely true. I want my neighbors to be successful too. It's just sometimes we get a little wrapped up in the fact that we think since we named this deer that it's our deer. And so actually, Joe and I have done a pretty decent job of we still name our deer, but some of them we don't. I mean, unless it's just one that we're really enthralled with, a lot of times we don't name them anymore just because it almost gets you too intrigued and too much thinking that that's going to be your deer. But definitely back to your point, I mean, we, on that 70 acres, the buck I harvested last year, we saw the previous year, we saw him 8 times. Out of probably hunting 16 times. I mean, we saw him almost half the time we were up in a tree, we saw this deer. And so, I mean, that tells you pretty quickly that that deer was very comfortable on our farm and pretty much utilizing our farm, which is 70 acres, you know, pretty 90% of the time he was up and around, but he was on our farm. And definitely have deer that aren't that way on our farm. But what we, our goal, and our goal for our new farm is the same, is to raise 1 to 2 of those deer, you know, every year, probably one a year, every year that you're hoping makes your farm its core area to where it's not leaving very often.
Yeah, and Joe, actually, was that buck that you passed, Joe, that was on your family farm, correct? And out of the same blind that Rick shot Worm out of, is that right?
Yeah, that deer wasn't on our radar last year. We did find pictures of him, but he was actually quite small. He really blew up, and we picked him up on camera, and in the first time we got him on camera, we were undecided on how old he was. And our first hunt out, there was quite a debate in the redneck blind about how old that deer was and what we should do. And he stayed out there long enough that we made a decision to let that deer walk this year. And so we're hoping that half success with deer getting into that upper age class can hold true for this buck. Now, it won't work for all of them, but since we've seen it happen, it could happen again. So we're going to let that one walk, even though we only have 70 acres. Our new farm, where we don't have that past history, we probably wouldn't let that deer walk. We would probably go ahead and take a crack at that deer if the shot presented itself, because we don't have that type of information yet to know if we can actually get deer up into that 5-6 year age class. So we treat each property different, because it's no fun to hunt a property and try to, and, you know, set a goal for 4-5-6 year buck, and then you can't get them to that age. Well, then you're not going to kill anything. And that takes all the fun out of hunting. We're out there to actually have the opportunity, you know, we want the opportunity to shoot something. So we still have to set our goals at a realistic level. So right now, our family farm, the 70-acre farm, our goals are 4 years and older. In our new farm, we basically set our goal at a three-year-old level. So, you know, something that makes us happy is a three-year-old walk by, we may shoot it on our new farm. But on our family farm, we're going to try to hold off for four-year-old deer. So we have two different standards. A lot of people probably don't have that, but we found that that's the best for us so that we can at least go and have that hope of having something shooter class come out, because we changed what we call a shooter based on, you know, how good the bucks are in that area.
Sure. And just for those of you that don't know, I'm originally from Missouri, where these guys, just up the road from where you guys are from. And a three-year-old buck down there in Missouri is a trophy buck to just about anybody. I mean, it is tough to get them any older than that. And that's why it's so cool, is because you guys are able to raise that age class just a little bit in some of these situations on your 70-acre farm, which is a rare thing to see down there. I mean, I hunted down there my whole life before getting up here to Iowa. And, boy, I was hard-pressed to pass a three-year-old buck on our property because, you know, there's just, at the time, there just wasn't high odds of him making it through into the next season. And at this point, Rick, how many four-year-old plus bucks have you guys killed in the last 5-6 years?
Ooh, I was just downstairs earlier looking at my wall, and I have 8 Pope and Young bucks that I've shot in the last probably 8 years. I don't know. Joe's killed several more, and my dad's killed a couple, and Ben killed one. So we're looking at, in the last 5 years, probably 2 a year, almost, about that 2 a year mark. Don't you think, Joe?
Yeah, that's real close.
Some of those, to be honest, some of those were 3 year olds. I mean, we, the nice thing about shooting for 4 year olds is when you make a mistake, that mistake's going to be a 3 year old.
Sure.
I've been doing this for, almost 20 years now, probably. And Joe's been doing it a little bit longer. And I think there's a little misconception out there about how accurate you really can be judging. Because I will get a group of my friends together, and we'll all look at the same deer and almost always have somewhat of an argument about how old they are. I think it's pretty easy to judge them within a year. But there is definitely that outside variable of not all deer are the same size, and there's a lot to it. So we do our best to say, yep, we think it's a 3 year old. Yep, we think it's a 4 year old. Shoot it, have a fun time doing it. And, you know, don't get too upset if you shoot a deer that's smaller than what your goal was originally. So.
Sure. Yeah, and there's definitely a lesson in that as well. I mean, I definitely also have trouble aging those suckers, but the point here is when you got those small properties like your family farm, is that you can watch them from year to to year, and that's really the most accurate way to do it. You know, if you have like Worm, for instance, the buck that Rick killed last year, you all had pictures and sightings and, you know, encounters of that buck for several years on end to be able to accurately age him in that. What do you think he was, Rick? 5, 6?
Pretty sure he was a 6 year old.
Yeah.
We filmed him as a 3 year old. And interestingly, I'm almost sure he had EHD that year, because he had him and another buck came in during the winter, and he was hobbling on his hoof, and later found out that sloughing of those hooves is pretty common. Even not doesn't kill all of them, but even the ones that get a little bit of EHD sometimes will get that. So he was a 3 year old at that time, and watched him since then. And he was on the list at 4 years old. We just weren't good enough to make it happen until he was 6. So
got really close though.
Yeah, several times. Yeah.
We'll kind of switch back here, switch gears a little bit. I want to go back to Joe and talk more about the new property. And What were you guys really looking for as far as neighborhood goes in big picture? Because Joe, we've discussed this, you and I, before, about not just looking at the individual property, but really looking at the big surrounding picture and how deer, you know, move through a river bottom, or what kind of neighbors that you've got and that sort of thing. Give us some tips from that regard as well.
Yeah, if you're looking at property, obviously I highly recommend using Google Earth and other satellite imaging resources to get a feel for the surrounding area. And what you're looking for from an imagery standpoint is how many houses are around. Are there roads nearby where you could access or use to access your property? Are there natural boundaries where deer are going to, you know, probably be limited from crossing? Such in our case, the river, probably not going to see deer cross that river very often. They could, but the tendency would probably not to cross it based on the other side of the river is mostly agricultural. So we, through the Google Earth imagery, we had a pretty good understanding of the area as far as how much traffic the properties should have, because there was a lot of timber near us, some ag near us, but not a lot of houses. So we're guessing it was a pretty normal hunting setup where the people hunted those properties near us, but there wasn't an overabundance of human impact around us. Then the second step that I went into was actually to find out who owned the properties around us and how big they were. So most counties, anyways, this is the case in Missouri, you can go to the courthouse and look at a plot map and see who owns the property in the area that you're looking to purchase the property. And what I did is find out if people owned small property around me or if people owned large chunks around me. What I found is that there was two large chunks of property owned near us, in the 300 to 500 acre range. And so knowing that you had a couple large landowners near us, and then there was a third large landowner, but it was mostly agriculture, so I didn't really, you know, gauge hunting pressure on that when it's a farm field. But what I found is when you only have a couple neighbors touching you and they have large acreage, they're probably not going to be pushed in on your boundary. If they own 300 acres, they're probably not going to be sitting on your fencing line. So I use those plot maps to get an understanding, because it's still guesswork. I mean, at this point, when you're looking to purchase a property, you're probably not going to be bold enough to go up to the neighbor and just flat out ask them, hey, how do you hunt? How many people hunt your property? What type of deer do you shoot? I mean, you could, but that could be an awkward conversation, and it could be tough to track that person down. So a little of it is guesswork. So from those two items, from the satellite imagery and then the plot map, we had a pretty good idea that around us would be a pretty good neighborhood. The variable we didn't know is what age class of deer those people killed and how many people hunted their property. Yeah, you could own 300 acres, but you could have 15 people on it. That's typically not the case in Missouri, but it could be, you know, on a rare occurrence. After we owned the property, we started talking to those neighbors, and we found that our assumptions were true. There's a handful of people hunting each property, and they manage for a three-year-old deer, which is kind of what we expected up in our new properties in Clark County, and that's something we expected to see up there. Most people are holding out for something in that three-year-old class range. So our assumptions were true, and it seems like for now we have a pretty good neighborhood of neighbors. So
cool. Well, yeah. To sort of wrap this thing up, I want to just ask you guys, from having experience on your family farm and hunting it for many years, managing it to a high level now, and going in and purchasing this new farm, what's your number one piece of advice for somebody out there that is currently saving right now and trying to buy one of these small properties, you know, 50, 100 acres, whatever it is?
Go for it first. my advice is definitely get prepared. So if most banks right now are looking at probably 25% down as a minimum, we went through FCS, which is a Farm Credit Services. They ended up allowing us to do 20%, and that's not always the case. It kind of depends on what you have. But definitely, you know, you're not going to be able to buy a property unless you have financing or can get financing available. So saving money is definitely a big part of it. The other aspect of it is try to figure out what area you want to buy in. So, you know, if you don't have money for a piece of property, this would be a good time to figure out what area has some big deer coming out of it. And when I say area, I'm probably looking at probably 2,000 to 3,000 acres of people that are hardcore, like trying to manage for big deer. If that's your goal, to find big deer, try to find an area where there's a large amount of people that are trying to kill big deer, and you'll definitely have some better success after that. Other than that, the big thing that Joe and I, maybe not Joe as much, but I do, definitely every week, if not more than that, as I'm looking either at Land Watch or Lands of America or some type of Whitetail Properties Avenue, to where you know what land is hitting the market. And even before you're ready to buy, it's probably a good idea to do that just so you know what land in certain areas is bringing, just so you can gauge whether or not it's a good deal when it hits the market. Because the deal is, any property that comes on the market that is a good deal does not last for very long. The 80 acres that we bought came on the market on a Tuesday, I think. I think Joe went and looked at it on Wednesday, and we put in an offer on Thursday, something like that. Is that right, Joe?
I think there's one more day in there. I think we got our offer in Friday.
But essentially, when that land becomes available, you want to be able to have finances ready. You want to know that that's the property you want. Make a couple quick decisions before you look at the property from those aspects that Joe was talking about, and then be able to strike when you can. And maybe, you know, maybe you're going to go into a property that's not as big because you don't have the finances available at that point. But that's okay. I think you land, in my estimation, is a good investment. So if you can get on the small piece of property and then, you know, later in life find a way to get a bigger piece of property, I think it's well worth it. We've had, Joe and I, like he said, I think earlier, grew up hunting public ground, had an absolute wonderful time hunting public ground. It's so much fun. But it's a different type of fun to own your own property and to manage it. If you can get in and do it, it's different, but it's almost like you're being a part of growing the deer and like giving them an avenue to do well. And you take ownership into your deer herd, and it's pretty cool from that aspect. I think we can do that from public land perspective as well, but definitely more so when you purchase property, you take ownership in it. And it's been awesome. So
I agree. Yeah, Joe, you got anything to add to that?
Yeah, from my standpoint, you got to keep an open mind. Properties are sold in a lot of different ways. We've been to some auctions. Sometimes it'll hit a small real estate site. Sometimes the property will be on one of the bigger ones. And it could go a lot of different ways. Maybe the property is real close to your home and it's overpriced, and your pathway is through negotiation and whittling the price down
and making some choices in your lifestyle so you can afford it. Other times it might be the auction setup where we've gone and prepared to purchase land through a land auction. Other pathways could be the standard traditional real estate. Keep an open mind, because there's a handful of ways that property could come up for sale. It may be a private sale that you just know the right person. So property is kind of one of those ones where some of it doesn't come up for sale very often at all. Some properties may never sell in our lifetime. They may stay in the same family or ownership for our entire lifetime, 100-year plus. So you have to realize that some property is locked in, you're never going to buy it. So you're actually looking at the small percentage of properties that sell. And so out of those properties, you got to clearly identify what you want and how much you're going to be willing to spend. And then, you know, like Rick said, be prepared, because if the property we just bought, if we wouldn't have been prepared as far as having our loan information ready for us to put a offer in on that property, we would have probably been too late. So it's a handful of things, but it's quite exciting. It's a lot of fun. Have fun doing it, because it's really neat to think of the possibilities of what land can hold and what you can do with it, and you know, start strategizing if you bought it, what you can do. It can be stressful, but it's also a pretty fun process. You just got to have a good footing and understand that not everything goes your way, but if you're persistent, you'll find something that'll fit your needs. It's out there. It just takes more work than I'd like it to be easier. It takes more work than sometimes want to put into it. Like Rick said, he literally probably looks every week to see what's out there on the market. Cause he's still looking. I'm done, but Rick's still looking. But the two things that on any small property, the two things you have to remember is no one's killed a deer on their property without these two things happening. That deer has to be on their property, and that deer has to be moving during legal shooting hours. Those two things are true of every deer we've ever killed on any of our properties. So every improvement we make or every decision we make is improve those two things. How much time a deer spends on our property and how much time that deer is daylight active. If you improve those things, if you double each of those, you just increase your chances by 4 of killing that deer.
Yeah.
So that's the real key. If you ask yourself those two questions, can I hold a deer on here more often, and can I make them more daylight active? That'll lead you to kill big deer.
Yeah, and that goes back to our conversation earlier about creating more bedding, you know, in the center of these properties, because when they're bedding and they're feeding on your property, you're going to be able to, you know, increase those daylight sightings that you just mentioned. If you're getting trail camera pictures of a giant buck on your property at 2 a.m. on right on the edge, you know, and he's coming off the neighbors where he's living most of the time and just cruising over there every once in a while, I'm sure that you might have a chance at killing that deer in the rut, you know, but most of the hunts that I've watched you guys have success in, you know, you've known about the deer most of the time. And they've been either really close or living on your property when you kill them. But
yeah, just to kind of curtail what you guys are talking about, one way specifically doing that, when I think of trail cameras, my goal with any trail camera that I set out is to make sure that I'm learning more about the deer than that deer is learning about me. And that's not always true when we set trail cameras out. I think that probably trail cameras are maybe one of the biggest things that's helped deer hunters kill big deer, but it's probably one of the biggest things that's helped deer
stay away from deer hunters as well, because we get that urge to go in and check them, and then we make them aware of where we're at. So,
well, guys, this has been a pretty eye-opening conversation, especially for me, having never bought a property before, and you know, have hopefully plans of doing so at some point. This is a pretty good conversation. I think the listeners are going to learn a lot. So I appreciate you both hopping on here with me and visiting. And we got a cold front coming in tomorrow, and man, I'm ready to get back in the tree stand. When's the next time you guys are going to be able to get out?
I'm hoping to go in tomorrow as well. So we've not been out but three times together, and so I'm hoping tomorrow that I can get out, probably with my dad. And I'm excited just to see what comes out of the public land hunting, guys, because I'm ready for one of those big bucks to come down. And actually, I was going to tell you too, Aaron, I kind of hope you don't ever find property to buy, because I like watching your public land hunting too much. So.
Well, I think most people that have watched that are optimistic for me. I still have quite a bit of pessimism. I don't know if I it's going to be a tough hunt tomorrow. We'll see. I'm going to get as close as I can to them without spooking them, but it's going to be tough. I'm just pinched down right there, and I don't have a lot of options, so I got to dive right in there next to them. I'm hoping that the wind is high enough and it's wet enough tomorrow when we do it that we don't blow them out of there, but we'll just have to wait and see.
I'm definitely one of those guys on the optimistic side. I'm chopping up the bit. I'm just like ready for it to show up that you killed one of those giants.
I hope so, man.
Well, good luck to you, man.
Yeah, you too, Rick. Joe, enjoy it up there in the cheese land.
Yeah, no, I'm ready to get back to Missouri. I kind of like it down there.
All right, guys. Well,
of course, right now I'm about a stone's throw from the Capitol up here, so I'm definitely in city.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, get me back in that country.
I hear you, buddy. Well, guys, good luck hunting, and we'll be watching for footage coming in here in the next week or two. I know you guys will be on one, but thanks again for hopping on with me, and take it easy.
Yep, you too.
Yep, you too.
Well, hopefully you all got a lot out of that conversation with the Knuckle Brothers, especially those of you that are planning on buying a small property in the future in your lifetime. Those guys definitely know what it takes to grow and hunt big deer on those little parcels like that. And if you want to watch more of their hunts, just check them out at Midwest Whitetail, the Great Plains Show. They are constantly giving us updates throughout their season on there, and those episodes come out every week, every Sunday morning, in fact, where you can follow the Knuckles on their new property, their new small property, that 80 acres, and their family farm, that 70 acres, where they've had all the success in the past. But definitely a cool topic with them. And the neat thing with these guys is they're just like the rest of us. They are, you know, your average hunter who is just, you know, working for a living, trying to save some money so that they can go out and do what they love, and that's, you know, hunt whitetails with their friends and family. And they're really, really fun to watch. I've enjoyed following those guys over the years. But that's going to wrap it up for this week's podcast. I appreciate y'all joining us, and we'll see you next time right back here on WhitetailWatch.com.